Blog Talk Radio.
This is Our Common Ground. Thank you for joining us tonight for Talk That Matters. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground.
Thank you so much for being with us. I am co-hosted by Mr. Alfo of the Alfo Show. Thank you, sir, for being with us tonight here at Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. Over the next 2 hours, we hope that you will stay with us to speak truth to power and ourselves. Alfo, you know, sometimes I dabble and I read the Bible and I dabble and I read the Quran, and I dabble and I read my guide to Buddhist hymns, and then I dabble a little bit more, and I read a little bit of Scientology, you know. So I really do miss my history of religion classes that I took in undergraduate school. It became a... When I went to college, I only knew African Methodist Episcopal, and I knew one or two Black Catholics and Episcopalians. So, and I knew all the Baptists, but anyway, one of the things that I read in the Quran today, Suleiman, I think 35, and it said that essentially that the greatest threat is not that Islam, it said the greatest of the blessings of people is that Islam would not change. But people change. And I reflected on that in regard to a president. And I wondered, to what extent must a man change who he is, or a woman, or who she is, in order to be the presiding council head of these United States? I really thought about that. I thought about that hard. I know, you know, most people understand that I've got some chemo brain going on, and sometimes I lose some of my memory. I really don't lose my memory. I can see it, but my brain, because of some of the brain cells that were killed by radioactivity, I can't make my mouth say them. My brain cannot make my mouth say them. That part of the brain got damaged. You get me? But anyway, I was really thinking, and I'm going to ask us to really try to edge into that. What must it be? What challenges must take you to a whole another level when you're the president of the United States? And the other is, I want us to put our criminal caps on tonight and figure out what is happening in Wisconsin. And then the other thing I want to deal with is this whole issue of holding up this budget, almost shutting down the federal government over an organization called Planned Parenthood, where only 3% of their services nationwide has to do with abortion. But my question is, American women, abortion has been legal in this country for almost 30 years. And my question is this, American women pay taxes. Why shouldn't they have the choice of safe abortions, which is guaranteed by their tax dollars? How are you tonight, Alpha? I'm in a tither.
I thought you'd never ask. You were just going.
I had to get that out before I forgot.
let me put it like this. You know, I look at, you know, I'll tell you like this. I'm pro-life, but it's their choice. And it's a matter of the same people are the same people who talk about their freedom and liberty, who talk about having their rights taken away from them. And if you want to stand and hold yourself up to be some type of champion for life, fine. If you don't like abortions, don't have one. But leave your morals.
You stole that from me, Alpha.
What?
Years ago. And you know it. Just admit it.
Years ago? About 5 years ago?
No. About 2 years ago. Go ahead. But we, okay, so Alpha and I, for you out there, we believe that if you are against abortions, say it with me, Alpha,
don't have
one.
Well,
you have to
okay,
go slow, Alpha. Let's do it again. 1, 2, 3.
Don't have one. Oh,
no,
how about this?
No, you got to go slow. Don't have one.
Well, I'm not going to treat them like they're challenged, mentally challenged, because let me put it like this. It's the same thing with those people who have sexual preferences. If you don't like gay people, don't sleep with another man or don't sleep with another woman. But leave your morals at the door. Leave the damn people alone. Leave the damn people alone because the...
And isn't that what liberty is all about?
Well, they only want liberty on their terms. See, it's about their terms, about what they want. Everybody else, no. You bear and you fall under our jurisdiction. You know, you've got these people in the name of whatever God they worship. And they want to tell you what God said. You ain't got to tell me nothing. Just mind your business. Leave your morals at the door. And that's the bottom line. You are basically...
You know, that also reminds me of another conversation that's going on in our community. And that is the discussion that's going on, actually furor. That's going on in our community. When you said moralist, that's what reminded me. The new book, which was released on Monday, Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention, by Dr. Manning Marable, that we have discussed here last week, there is some research by Dr. Marable which suggests that, and I'm only a quarter through the book, because everything else is a lot of other stuff has been going on this week, and I couldn't steal myself away. But black folks, and nobody is a child of Malcolm, larger and bigger and in 3D than I am. And black folks are going crazy because they're saying that now Dr. Manning Marable, a distinguished researcher and scholar and activist, all of a sudden is trying to scar the character of Malcolm X. We're going to cover that at Power Views on Monday night at 10 p.m., and I hope those of you out there who are interested in that subject will join us, because there are some other scholars who, and people are very angry that Manning Marable would even delve into the personal life and the intimate sexual life of Malcolm X. And that will be Monday at Power Views at TruthWorks Network, right here. But we're going to get started. We're going to talk about this shutdown because I'm exhausted from it. Are you exhausted from it, Alpha? I'm just tired.
I'm not exhausted.
Last night at 11:45, I couldn't take it anymore.
I'm not exhausted from it. No, I'm not exhausted from it. If anything, I'm energized from it, because it just,
I see,
just goes to show you exactly what I've been saying all along, all this time, about these damn Republicans. Oh, you over the top. You hate Republicans. You're damn right, because they are not honest.
You know, Alpha, you're absolutely right, and tomorrow I wish that there were a radio show where I could go to, or a discussion group, to talk about the intersection of socialism and Pan-Africanism. I think that's where black people ought to be. But the general question, we have open mics tonight, and I hope Oronde will call me, because I'm interested in something that you had a good show today, something that he had to say. The basic question here, if you don't want to talk about this other stuff, here it is. What is the greatest threat against black people today? I want to hear from you. Our number is 347-838-9852. You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and he's Alpha, and we're going to get this party started.
But when I leave, you can remember I said the last words on my lips. I am a revolutionary, and you're going to have to keep on saying that. I am a revolutionary. I am a revolutionary.
While laughing at the moon, slipping into darkness, takes my mind.
This is Our Common Ground. Our Common Ground. Talk that it matters. Speaking truth to power and ourselves. Speaking truth to power and ourselves. Stay tuned.
Here at Our Common Ground, we do have our chat room open at blogtalkradio.com/OCG, and I see that Lion's Den has joined us, Saka Zulu, smooth operator, single tax on land. We have some guests, and of course, the TruthWorks Network, A Heart for My People, heard here at Blog Talk Radio on TruthWorks Network. The host of A Heart for My People, Dr. Deborah, is in our chat room, and you are invited to be in our chat room as well. Hey, Alpha, you know, on this whole discussion, blah, 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 shut the government down, we're going to hold you hostage and everything, all of us had some real hope. We were hoping that this president would get what you've been saying for months and months and for years, since he's been in office, what I've been saying, that he needs to be pressed to it, pressed down on the metal, get to the democracy kind of president. And this is what we hoped we would hear.
Hello. Speaker, Senator.
I want to thank you, Mr. President, on behalf of my colleagues. None of us think this is a perfect deal. No one likes to see the sausage made, including the guys who make it. But this is an expression of willingness by both sides to keep all avenues open to an eventual resolution.
Yes, thanks, Robert, and thanks for saying it this time. I think I had to make that little speech the last time around. Or maybe the time before. This is our third CR, our third time coming up short. We got to do better. People aren't paying us to duck the hard choices. You want to run through the details, Angela?
An act of Congress. A continuing resolution to extend no later than January 3rd, midnight, to include a reduction by 1%.
Excuse me, Mr. President, I'm sorry. There's been a change. I know we talked about a 1% cut. It's going to have to be 3.
Mr. Speaker, nothing like this was even mentioned, much
Hold
less...
On. I'm sorry we couldn't get more notice, but we just came from our conference, and I had significant opposition to only 1%.
Only 1%?
Yes, sir.
We had a deal at 1%.
But now my members have to go back to their districts for the holidays, explain why we kept the gravy train running with a rising deficit and an economy crying out for tax relief. It's an economic situation that calls for action, not status quo spending. A 3% may sound painful, but it's only for 2 months. It'll show we're serious.
What's next?
Sir?
In 2 months, 5%? 50? How many rounds do we go, Jeff? I'm just asking.
There is no next, sir. I mean, not to get too technical, but this government runs out of money at midnight, and my guys have gone home. This is it.
No.
There is no altering this offer, Mr. President.
And I said no.
Let's be clear, sir. We cannot, we will not vote to keep on footing the bill. You will be held responsible for shutting down the federal government.
Then shut it down.
Now, Alpha, could we have hoped for that?
No, because he don't want to hurt the economy. He don't want the people to be hurt. He don't want to stand up. I mean, was that a clip from that presidential show? What is the name
that
of that show?
That was a clip from The West Wing.
Okay, West Wing. Okay.
Fictional TV, making more sense than real life.
It's true to life. It's really true to life. You know, it galls me the way they craft and try to frame this narrative. They are creating this emergency, this shock doctrine moment, overspending. And instead of the response being, you're the ones who caused, Bush is the one who caused this deficit to be where it is. I'm simply trying to get us out of it. Instead of that being the narrative and that being the comeback, and when they say, when I hear people say, oh, you're still trying to blame Bush, I would simply respond with, we still blame Hitler, don't we? We still blame Charlie Manson. We still blame Bernie Madoff. What's the difference?
My response would have been, the facts don't change.
Exactly. You blame who's responsible.
But you know, the thing is that this was the third hostage taking. And my sense is because we have not really heard what's in the $38 billion.
Exactly. We have not heard. And according to the CBO, it's going to cost $100,000 to 200,000 jobs. So how does that reflect on what you're trying to do? They are systematically choking off the recovery. And every time they they push, kick this ball down the road. Well, you watch, and then in the next week we'll be at the same place. Because by next week,
Thursday.
They will ask for more.
Absolutely. And this is what the president, part of what the president had to say. As though something monumental and helpful and benefited anybody but the one percenters in this country.
Watch President Obama.
Behind me, through the window, you can see the Washington Monument. This is it each year by hundreds of thousands.
Wait, I have to stop that, Alpha. I just have to stop it. What was that about?
What was what about?
The Washington Monument thing. He made a big deal in his and would somebody please write whitehouse.gov and tell the president, have somebody tell the president, stop hitting on the dais. It is so annoying. Every time he wants to make a put some foam rubber on the dais so that we don't constantly hear that banging, because every time he makes a point, he hits the dais and it hits the microphone, and it's very... So let's get back to the speech.
Watch President Obama.
Behind me, through the window, you can see the Washington Monument, visited each year by hundreds of thousands from around the world. The people who travel here come to learn about our history and to be inspired by the example of our democracy. A place where citizens of different backgrounds and beliefs can still come together as one nation. Tomorrow, I'm pleased to announce that the Washington Monument, as well as the entire federal government, will be open for business. And that's because today, Americans of different beliefs came together again. In the final hours before our government would have been forced to shut down, leaders in both parties reached an agreement that will allow our small businesses to get the loans they need, our families to get the mortgages they applied for, and hundreds of thousands of Americans to show up at work and take home their paychecks on time, including our brave men and women in uniform. This agreement between Democrats and Republicans, on behalf of all Americans, is on a budget that invests in our future while making the largest annual spending cut in our history. Like any worthwhile compromise, both sides had to make tough decisions and give ground on issues that were important to them. And I certainly did that. Some of the cuts we agreed to will be painful. Programs people rely on will be cut back. Needed infrastructure projects will be delayed. And I would not have made these cuts in better circumstances. But beginning to live within our means is the only way to protect those investments that will help America compete for new jobs. Investments in our kids' education and student loans, in clean energy, and life-saving medical research. We protected the investments we need to win the future. At the same time, we also made sure that at the end of the day, this was a debate about spending cuts, not social issues like women's health and the protection of our air and water. These are important issues that deserve discussion, just not during a debate about our budget. I want to thank Speaker Boehner and Senator Reid for their leadership and their dedication during this process. A few months ago, I was able to sign a tax cut for American families because both parties worked through their differences and found common ground. Now the same cooperation will make possible the biggest annual spending cut in history. And it's my sincere hope that we can continue to come together as we face the many difficult challenges that lie ahead, from creating jobs and growing our economy to educating our children and reducing our deficit. That's what the American people expect us to do. That's why they sent us here. A few days ago, I received a letter from a mother in Longmont, Colorado. Over the year, her son's eighth grade class saved up money and worked on projects so that next week they could take a class trip to Washington, D.C. They even have an appointment to lay a wreath on the tomb of the unknown soldier. The mother wrote that for the last few days, the kids in her son's class have been worried and upset that they might have to cancel their trip because of a shutdown. She asked those of us in Washington to get past our petty grievances and make things right. And she said, remember, The future of this country is not for us. It's for our children. Today we acted on behalf of our children's future. And next week, when 58th graders from Colorado arrive in our nation's capital, I hope they get a chance to look up at the Washington Monument and feel the sense of pride and possibility that defines America, a land of many that has always found a way to move forward as one. Thank you.
You know, Alpha, I have yet to understand how those comments have anything to do with what has happened over the last 2 years. The president, and I believe him when he say this is about a balanced budget. You could easily balance a budget in less than 10 years, even including the interest payments on the national debt, simply by cutting the waste in military spending, reforming the government contracting procedures, ending tax loopholes for investment bankers and offshore companies, ending subsidies to oil companies and big agribusinesses, taxing speculative financial trades, and having millionaires pay taxes at the same rate they did under Ronald Reagan, and it's done. Why does this president think what he had to say?
Cutting the throats of the needy and the poor, the elderly, the
absolutely.
Children. Why are we fighting
absolutely.
On that field? Why are we fighting
it,
on their framed narrative? They have framed this narrative that the spending, oh, it's the spending, it's the spending. They have been the biggest spenders in the last 4 decades. And my problem is simply this. They need to be told. They need to be exposed. And there needs to be as many Democrats rushing the microphones as there are Republicans.
But one of the things we've got to get clear about, Alpha, and for those of you who are out there listening, I think that we've got to get clear about who they is. Our number is 347-838-9852. We'd like to get your call on this. 313, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. I respect you.
Hey, Janice and Alpha, this is Deborah.
Dr. Deborah, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing good. You know what my position is. I think we're getting screwed from all sides.
I'm afraid
about what we're missing in this $38 million and what they're going to do with that continuing resolution that gives them time to finalize what goes into the numbers. They're hoping we're not paying attention. And I'm
yes,
so sick of hearing Obama on TV, like you said, Janice and Alpha, about that clip. But I don't give a damn about that kid in Montana not being able to go on a trip. This man is not addressing the real issues that face the average working and poor person in this country. And, you know, I don't understand. I do understand. What I don't understand is John Q. Public. When are they going to get the message that nobody in Washington is representing our best interests, including Barack Obama? You cannot keep cutting if you're not bringing in revenue. I don't care
because
considering the deficit, what they did is nothing.
Absolutely. It does nothing.
This is how insidious
they have become. And this president needs to understand that if he plays the same kind of politics as George Bush and Ronald Reagan and Bush 1 and Bill Clinton, he's going to get the same kind of legacy in this country. On Friday, HHS outlined some national plan, and in the report that they issued, they said that they were going to be increasing by 10% the number of poor children who receive preventive dental care, including cavity blocking sealants. they said that they would increase the use of train promotoras, the Spanish term for trusted locals. Head Start will use them to direct parents to health services. They said that they are going to initiate new studies comparing which treatments work best for diabetes, asthma, arthritis, and heart disease in minority populations. This is part of their plan to address inequities, as they say, health disparities in minority communities. Do they really think that we're going to be buying this in the light that they're also selling out the health and well-being, it's like economic genocide in our community around some of the issues of how you buy clothing, how you buy groceries, whether or not black elderly people who 100% depend on Social Security and Medicare will get the government
vouchers,
assistance that they need. And they do they do I, somebody help me here. Do they think that something like that is going to compare to the fact that they have sold out working people and poor people in this country?
I don't know. I'm just wondering, when is that dialogue going to happen? I want to see a Democrat other than Wiener out of New York and Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, get on TV and talk about this. The president
right.
gets up there and it's total absolute nonsense what he talks
Where's
about.
Kucinich? You know, you all talk about Kucinich. You talk about Kucinich being a liberal, progressive, et cetera, et cetera. He jumped up when the president joined in with NATO to hit Libya, but you haven't heard from him on this budget.
No, you haven't. I mean, really. I absolutely agree.
Part of the problem in our community, and I still pose the question, what is the greatest threat against black people today, in your opinion, 347-838-9852 is our number for calling in to express what you believe all of this is about, well, where we will end up, and what's our greatest threat. I mean, we got to stay focused, people. We cannot allow. I mean, for President Obama, Dr. Deborah, this is what's giving me a headache right in between my eyebrows. It's squeezing hard. For President Obama to end this week having given away $38 billion in cuts in the 2011 budget.
Right, what remains?
What did he cut and what remains? And then to try to be grateful? What's that about? Dr. D, I'm going to put you on hold
okay.
for a second.
Sure.
And I'm going to go to another caller. 954, you're on the air. Thank you for your call. What are your comments? I respect you.
Good evening, beautiful queens. And
good
Reverend
evening.
Spencer.
I'm going to bring Dr. D on with you, Aronde, as well. Thank you for your
man,
call.
Oh, man, I appreciate all of y'all. I got a question.
How are you?
I'm trying to figure out if I'm still alive when they had the first government shut down. The only thing I only remember was the Y2K scare back, 95? Around this time?
Yeah, it was 2 years before 9/11.
So I'm trying to figure out if the government did shut down, I'm like scratching my head, like for how long, and can somebody explain to me the difference, and I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, between balancing the budget and paying off a debt. I mean, I don't understand what balancing the budget means.
Okay, I'll explain
in this reality.
Let me explain it to you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The national debt has to do with all indebtedness of the United States of America. All. The budget has to do with current expenditure. What you have to, you know, for instance, every time the Pentagon or the State Department or HHS contracts out a program or a service or expenses, that money becomes obligated as an appropriation from Congress. And I want everyone out there to understand this process. No money, no tax money can be spent or appropriated without the appropriation being voted upon by the Congress. It is not the president who spends money. It is the Congress who obligates tax dollars to be spent. So, Aronde, to your question, the national debt includes three unbudgeted wars, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya. It also includes military action in Pakistan and military support and action and orders in other parts of the country that were unplanned, not budgeted for. So okay. That is why the national debt has to be dissolved, but there also has to be appropriations for a budget. For instance, when HUD gets a budget for public housing, that money becomes obligated. HUD can't spend it for anything else but public housing. You see what I'm saying? Mm. When each secretary goes into the Congress before a committee, presents a budget, a proposed budget, that committee votes on it, and the HUD committee is the Veterans Committee. The budget is voted on. There's negotiation before and after the presentation of the proposed budget. It is then sent from committee to the House. The House votes upon it. Then the Senate votes on it, and then the House does something permanent to it, and then it's sent to the White House for signature.
Now, how is the debt?
If the White House wants to change it, the president has to veto it. And one of the things that people are not considering in people who are not paying attention to teabaggers and all those people who don't know what the crap they're talking about most of the time, they are not understanding that the national debt was, and the reason it went from $4 trillion, what was it, Alfo, $11 trillion when President Obama came into office to $14 trillion, is to be able to pay the appropriations made by Congress in Afghanistan and Iraq. They haven't paid Libya yet. That does not even part of the deal. But it's still calculated in the national debt. That's as simple as I can get it in terms of an explanation.
That was great. Now, now I understand that portion of it. But now, how do you balance a budget and try to pay off a debt at the same time?
Well, it works differently. It works very differently. You can appropriate according to the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot pay down the debt, the national debt, as long as it's like if you own a house, Aronde.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a new roof. You got a mortgage, you got a second mortgage. Then you get the new roof, that gets added on, and somehow your bottom line doesn't get to go down. Now, if you make the decision not to get the roof and you keep paying off the first mortgage, but you're not paying off on the second mortgage, you're still in debt and getting in debt. You're not bringing down your debt. And that's how it works. Every major country, industrialized country in this world, I think the national debt for China is something like $23 trillion. But it has an economy that's producing revenue necessary to pay it off You pay it off at a rate that is reasonable, that makes sense. Mm. It never goes away. National debt never goes away. But the debt ceiling, it's like if you had a budget in your house, you know what your debt is. You get a raise, a major raise.
Mm-hmm.
Then you begin to look at your debt differently. You know, if your debt is $89,000 and your pay is $85,000 and somebody gives you $250,000, you start looking at your $85,000 debt differently as compared to your revenue, your revenue being your income. So while China's revenue, national economy, has been generating and growing, ours has stayed stagnant for almost 25 years since Ronald Reagan. I don't care what Bill Clinton said. We had some surplus in regard to our national debt, but it didn't mean that we had some surplus, but it didn't mean that we didn't have a debt. You understand?
This is very.
So when they tell you that Bill Clinton left a surplus, it simply meant that Bill Clinton figured out a way through NAFTA and through some other ways, and it was mostly on paper that we had got, somebody gave us, you know, in the example that I was giving, somebody gave us $250,000.
Well, you know, this,
so that's
this guy, Bernie Sanders, explained it with the Social Security about the surplus. It's in the, I want to say the right thing, trillion, that they could pay off Social Security for the next 27 years, I believe it is.
Yeah, people who are working are not going to stop paying into Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is you're dealing with baby boomers. That was when they say it was a boom on babies, it was a boom on babies. For one generation, there was a period of austerity and people were having lots of kids. Especially, I mean, people are not thinking about during the time of the hippies and then the dot-com generation. Mm-hmm. People started having 4 and 5, 6 children.
Well, on Social Security, let me say this. After $106,000, everyone stops paying into Social Security. All you have to do is change that. If you are making more than $106,000, you should continue to pay for Social Security. The fact that Social Security has a $2.6 trillion surplus right now and can pay out benefits 100% through 2037. That small incremental increase on those who can afford it will put all of this BS to rest about the need for Social Security.
Absolutely.
To be altered, crafted. Social Security is self-sustaining. And if
but you all know that that's not the point, Alfo. The point about this discussion on Social Security is so that all of the wealthy corporations can have a piece of the privatization of Social Security. That's all they want. It's the same thing with Medicare.
I understand that that's what they're driving for, but that's another false battlefield. And if we continue to fight on these false battlefields, that's where we're going.
You're
absolutely right. We should be fighting on the battlefield that the actual battlefield.
Yeah. I've got two other callers. Aronde, make your point real quick because I've got three callers.
Remind me what happened when they shut down the government the first time, because I'm still trying to remember what the outcome of that was. That was supposed to happen in 95.
Well, the thing with shutting down the government,
what was
it
the effect? Because I don't remember.
It was a political play. It was a political play. There was no effect other than the federal workforce went back to work and got back pay, and they had to pay interest on the back pay.
Okay. Thank you, Janice.
Aronde, can you please join us on Monday night for Power View? We're going to be talking about a very, very deep topic on the issue of Malcolm, the new book on Malcolm X. And
I will definitely most try, sister. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
Much
All
love
right.
to you. Oh, we're going to go to this next call, 111. You're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call. 111.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Good evening to you. Is this Sister Janice?
Yes, it is.
Hello? Lovely program that you have. This is my first time calling into the program. I've been a long-time listener, first time calling in.
Oh, thank you so much, my sister.
Yes. I've been following you along ever since you were in USA Talk Network. And
oh,
then you
wow.
So
well, I'm glad you – we do really appreciate all of our listeners, and I especially appreciate having someone who is loyal. Loyal listeners, ring a bell or something, Alpha, for crying out loud, for a loyal listener. What's your comment?
Well, what I was going to comment on is the situation here with the president. A lot of people, or what I've seen with black people and with this president here, is that they have been so anesthetized and they have been so in love with having this black family in the White House that they are unable to see anything else. They don't want to see anything else. I've gotten into verbal fights with people, and sometimes almost to the point of being thrown out of homes because...
Oh, yeah. May I ask you, before you make your comment about that, is it Sarah?
Yes.
Listen, before you make your comment, Sarah, I am so glad to have you. I am so glad to have you because you also are a big fan of someone who I absolutely love and listen to every day, too.
Okay.
And I'm so glad to know that you're in your new home and you're safe and you're laying back and you're staying on it. Go for it, Sarah.
Well, thank you so much. I know I'm a big fan of the Philly Connection. That's my hometown, so I know I have a lot of loyal followers back there. But, yes, what we're saying with the president, because coming from Atlanta, the so-called black Mecca where I moved from, and people there, people always like to say that Atlanta is a big Mecca, but Atlanta is a big front. If you've never been there before and got involved with the black community down there, you would know what I'm speaking of, because it's all show but no substance. And
yes.
Because they could have done a lot of things they could have done there as far, because if you look at the block, the political situation down there in Atlanta, you might have a black front, but it's still controlled through Buckhead, but it is still white hands. You have to go back to the
yes.
Buckhead coalition to get everything done in the city of Atlanta. And,
you just gave me a real good show idea, because you're absolutely right. That was set up for a reason.
Yes.
And people, it was part of the movement to negritize black people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come here thinking you got some kind of super black economic base, political base, because it's not going to happen. We're going to negritize you. And the crowning glory of that whole setup about Atlanta being the black Mecca. The crowning glory, folks, is Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh, God, please.
That tells you everything you need to know.
Yes, it does.
Sarah.
I think it's done specifically for a purpose, because right now there's a lawsuit going through the system right now in Atlanta because of these so-called bedroom communities that have broken away from Fulton County, and which is a tax base, and they've formed all of these so-called small enclaves, which are predominantly white.
Yeah, Dunwoody and all
Dunwoody,
of those. I read that. Yep.
Milton, yes. And right now there's a lawsuit that was filed about a week or so ago by a few black attorneys, because they're trying to say it's against the Voting Rights Act of 1964, and they're trying to have the city dissolved, because what they have done is that they have formed these communities illegally without opening a total open referendum. So that is something that you're going to be looking for if you do decide to put the show together. There are some key people that you might want to get in.
I read the article yesterday.
Yeah. And
about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it tells you right then and there that these people sat around and see this stuff happening under their nose, and they allowed it to happen. When the first community broke away, they should have put their feet down and make sure that all of these other communities did not follow suit and do the same thing. That is why Atlanta Public Schools is going through this mess now with SACS and accreditation, because anytime you become predominantly black, white people want to find a way to get their foothold in there, and they want to shake it up. So there's the Atlanta Public Schools, Clayton Public Schools, DeKalb Public Schools, all of these schools are going through issues with the accreditation, and whereby they are trying to shake them up. So these are things they started with Maurice Brown, and they got their foothold in there, and then they're working their way completely through the black areas that are predominantly black controlled in order to bust it up.
But, you know, the thing is, Sarah, that one of the things that we lose our focus. And we have especially lost our focus with this president. For somehow we thought he was the Messiah, and it's turning out that he's the Pharaoh, and we've got to figure out what our strategy is.
You see, what has started is with these so-called black preachers that are saying, okay, we have got Andy Young and all of them, they're a total disgrace. Even not a story, I don't even want to go into that with him. They're all a total disgrace, because all of these people have ruined Dr. King's, the civil rights movement, made their wealth off of it, and now they've lived to see their children and grandchildren become old, and they don't want to go out there, and they don't want to put themselves out there, because I guess they don't want to take a bullet. So they've become very, very comfortable and with their payout money.
For
the black
community. Our president appeared at the National Action Network conference this week, for those of you who might not know. I think that he understands that he's on shaky ground in our community, and he has enlisted the faith of the voice of Reverend Al Sharpton. Now, those of you who have listened to me for many, many years understand that Reverend Al Sharpton is my friend. I think that everybody has a role. But in the scheme of things, we have to figure out what's the real deal here.
You see, Sharpton has known he has been anointed as a kingmaker. He's in and out of the White House, him, Ben Jealous, as well as Mark Morial. And they have lost their complete focus with the black community, because the NAACP, all of these mess ups that Ben Jealous have allowed to happen under his watch, has shown this him to be a young, inexperienced pup in need of strict guidance, with the Shirley Sherrod situation all the way down, all of these mistakes that he has made, including the last debacle with the advertising that was given, all of their advertising was given to a white corporate media, nothing given to the black media. So this has shown that these people, where people are asking their relevancy, whether or not the so-called organization, if they are still relevant, because they are making too many costly mistakes at the expense. Right now in Atlanta, they are fighting, they are putting a marker, the veterans of the Confederacy wants to put in marker to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the burning of Atlanta on Martin Luther King Drive, right down there in Maryland. No, I think that's the ultimate insult, that these people who always want to relive the Civil War, you're going to allow the NAACP is fighting it, but you're going to allow them to go ahead and put a marker to commemorate on Dr. King's Drive. They could put it in Stone Mountain Park, any one of the other Civil War memorial parks, they could go and put that marker. It doesn't have to be put in a drive named after Dr. King.
What do you think has emboldened? You see that kind of thing all over the country. You see that the Republicans, along with the Tea Bigots, have now established a national drive around Alpha, help me out here.
The voter ID situation.
Yes. Suppression. Voter suppression. There is a wave of legislation across this country, voter suppression, which is focused on black people.
Black and Hispanics, because right now those are the two largest population in the country, is the Latino and the black population, because white people, their numbers are going down. There are more of them dying than are being born. And right now, if you saw what took place in Arizona, all along the Southwest region where they are trying to disenfranchise these people, Texas and all of these areas, they're trying to get them out of the voting pool. And it is our fault that we, because the Latinos, they're fighting back, because there was a big rally in Atlanta about a couple of days ago where they were talking about these students. They're trying to put them out, even though they might be here illegally, and if they can pay them, pay their way to go through, like out-of-state tuition fee to go to school, they can do so. In Atlanta, in Georgia, they're trying to change that to make sure that they cannot go to school, period. So these Latinos, they were out in large numbers doing what we used to do back in the 60s, where black people have gotten lazy and they don't want to do it. We don't want to do the work, but all of these other people have taken our blueprint and it's perfecting it and making using it to their advantage. And what I'm saying, once again, it has to do with this president, because black people, and like, what I believe all along is this. White people know that to get black people off our game, they have to do this. They get a black man, put him into office so black people would say that, okay, Dr. King's dream has become fulfilled. You cannot say anymore that you cannot rise to the highest office in the land. So once that has been attained, they can tame down the black people and says, okay, well, now you can get whatever you want. But in the meantime, it's going to rile up the white base, because now they're going to think that, okay, all of these black people, they're moving ahead of us, they're doing better than we are, which is what has happened. So they've got us with one hand, and we're getting a backlash with the other, because that is what they have done. And some of us, we can't see it. And I've been trying to wake people up and said, this is what they have done to you. We have done this to raise up the sleeping giant.
Yep. Hey, it's Sarah. I've got to go to other callers. But one of the things, I need you to get in touch with me at Janice. And for those of you who are listening, my email address is janice@ourcommonground.com or ocginfo@ourcommonground.com. At Blog Talk Radio, at our site at Blog Talk Radio, you can also get my email address to talk to us. But I do need to talk to you, Sarah, about some ideas that I have. We've got to grow the audience for the show before we move to another level. One of the things that I want to do is to have maybe a monthly panel of listeners co-host this show. And I'd love to talk to you about it.
I most certainly will send you an email and give you my information when we get offline.
Okay. Now all we need is Kit and Theopolis.
I'll shoot them an email as well. I will go ahead and CC them and tell them that to get in contact with you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sarah, for your call. I love your insight. We're gonna go to 405. You're talking on Our Common Ground with Alpha and Janice Graham, and we respect you. Thank you for your call.
Good evening, Janice.
The Don! Bring it on!
Yes, and I too like to hear from Sarah. I hear her all the time, and Kit and all of them. You know, we all have mutual interest there, and she said quite a bit. You know, I'm kind of put myself into a corner here trying to come back after her. But let's get down to that question. What is your question? Your question is
basic question tonight is, what is the greatest threat against black people today?
Well, in my opinion, my humble opinion, Janice, is two words, three words, lack of knowledge.
All right.
And I'm not saying lack of education. There's a difference between education and knowledge. And we need to pursue knowledge,
mm-hmm.
especially in the technological age that we're in now. We can easily go to the internet, thank God for it right now, and get a wealth of information and education and knowledge for very little cost. Even our shows, we can listen to one another and educate one another and sort of bounce things off one another and learn from one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
did I ever tell you that Our Common Ground used to have a program at night in South Florida when we were doing our South Florida, and every night Monday through Thursday, we had a teacher from the high school doing basic math, grammar, English, writing, history lessons over the air.
No. I never heard that. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, if all of us could do that.
We had a program. Man, I'm telling you, I love to say that because, you know, all the men talk show hosts, they always say, man, hey there, man.
Oh, yeah.
Good to hear from you, man. Okay, well, man, we used to have it going on.
Because I know time is of the essence. I know time is of the essence because there's a lot of people that probably want to get on and talk and have a say. And I could go on and on, you know me, but
I always give you your time. I give everybody their time.
Well, that's true, you know, and I appreciate that, you know.
But you're absolutely right. It is about knowledge.
Yes, and I have found that you know, I'm not going to sort of down our brothers and sisters who's leading these organizations, because bottom line, I look at, you know, what have they done? They've been in these organizations for all these years in ACP. I'm a member and so on and so forth. And the Black National Action Network, you know, Jesse Jackson's organization, you know, they've been around for a long, long time. And then I look at the effect that they have had upon our community as a whole, and I see us still on the bottom fighting for some type of leverage to get some type of economic opportunity in this country. So that pushes me to sort of be a lone wolf. You know, I've sort of been a lone wolf all my life. I was out on the street at 17, and I never went back home. Never looked back on it. I realized that I had to make it one way or another, and I had to do what I had to do to accomplish my goals. And so I intermingle with individuals that I could learn from. I see a lot of chat here about interracial marriage and interracial relationships. I think all of us have been affected by that, myself, my family, every family. I've got Lumbee Indian in me and a bunch of other stuff, you know, almost like a mongrel, you know. And a bunch of us are, you know, in a nice way. You know, we got a lot of stuff in it. So I kind of want to drift back to what can we do to benefit our people, and that is educate them, give them some knowledge, you know, and then they can go forth and do what they need to do. You know, the thing that we don't have that the other groups have around us is a common cultural language that these people have. The Spanish people entiende español, just Spanish. Let me just put it that way. My mind is sort of fluttering right now. But they have their own language. The Chinese, the Japanese, all of these cultures around us that have benefited from our struggle. Every single one of them have their own common language. We don't. And that hurts us, Janice. That hurts us deeply, deeply.
Well, the other thing is we have lost our sense of mission and purpose. You know, once we came out of the civil rights era, we started doing a little dabbling in black liberation theology, Pan-Africanism, nationalism.
We tried it.
And we didn't have a framework under which to work, and we lost a sense of what is our mission now. Okay, we got our children in these schools. Okay, we got a law which is supposed to protect us from housing discrimination. We got a law which is supposed to protect us from employment discrimination. What
mm-hmm.
is our mission as a, what is our collective purpose? And that is what we have to reframe, redefine.
Absolutely. And I think each of us are at least, you know, one. It's like each one reach one, each one teach one.
Exactly.
You know,
hey, Don,
anyway, I appreciate the opportunity, Janice. And you
and
have a great weekend.
Okay, thank you, Don, and we'll see you Monday night at Power Views. I'm sure you're going to want to be there. Alpha, that is, I mean, our response to this whole nonsense that went on around shutting down the government, we were almost without voice.
What do you mean almost without voice? I don't have a damn thing to say about it because y'all wouldn't be getting a paycheck tomorrow.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to Our Common Ground. We'll be right back. We're not going anywhere, but we're going to take a break.
You are our mothers, you are our sisters, you are our daughters. AIDS is the leading cause of death for black women ages 25 to 34. But there are things you can do to help.
Prevention is power.
Get educated, get tested, get treated.
Help stop AIDS.
Word up. Hi, this is Maya, and you are listening to Our Common Ground, Janice Grimm, talk radio that matters. Harriet Tubman, respect. Malcolm X, respect. W.E.B. Du Bois, respect. Reverend Martin Luther King, respect. Sojourner Truth, respect. Word up. It's all about respect.
And and thank you for being with us tonight. I'm here with Alpha, my co-host at Our Common Ground. And, yes, that was my 9-year-old grandson with his Word Up promo that he created because he's learning how to do audio editing. You got that, Alpha?
3 miles.
Yeah. And if my granddaughter is listening, I want to wish her well. She's going on her first international trip tomorrow on her way to the Dominican Republic to work in a refugee camp for victims of the Haitian earthquake. She'll be there for 8 days. She and 16 of her classmates as a project that they are doing as part of the process of graduating from high school, and I wish her well to be safe and to learn that what she will be doing over the next 8 years is what her life should be about, and that is helping people who are less fortunate, less blessed than her, and that will be the core of her power. Dr. Deborah is back with us, Alpha. One of the things we want to get to, and one of the reasons I want to hold you on, is this whole issue of these people are emboldened. And they are emboldened in ways that we have never dreamed of, and we better start dreaming. But before we get to Wisconsin and the incredible turn of events there on the state Supreme Court race, I do want to tell you that Amy Alexander, who has been a guest here at Our Common Ground, and she's a frequent listener, and I hope she's out there, her new book, Uncovering Race, is going to be released in October by Random House. She is an award-winning black journalist, and she's a tough-minded sister who's looking at the treatment of ethnic minorities both in newsrooms and in the reporting that comes out of them within the changing media landscape. Look for the book, Uncovering Race, by Amy Alexander, and I wish Amy well. We have already booked her for October 29th. I told her she could hang with the big boys and then come over here.
We can't have Amy Alexander. After she's being jealous of them, you know we can't have Amy Alexander doing nothing.
She's shooting at us, huh, Alpha?
Oh. And for the Janice, that piece that she wrote about the NAACP and Ben Ellis, I'm still laughing over that piece. Come on.
For those of you who are listening, Alpha is referring to Amy Alexander's wonderful piece that she wrote about her experience. I mean, this woman is just a wonderful journalist. And you might remember her when we talked with her about her book on black suicide. And Uncovering Race will be her second book. She wrote the book on black suicide with Dr. Alvin Poussant. But Amy Alexander wrote a piece about the NAACP and the 6 months that she worked there. Many of you will recall that all of a sudden Ben Jealous was putting out a lot of editorials, a lot of really, really on-point commentary and opinion pieces about current events and things that were happening. And then they had the NAACP convention where President Obama, that was one of his first major speeches after he was elected, and it was going so well. Well, all of that work was being done. All of those pieces were being written by Amy Alexander. Well, when they finished with I don't know how to explain it, but do a Google on Amy Alexander and been jealous. She talks about Shirley Sherrod not being the only one with NAACP treadmarks across their back. So, Dr. Deborah, have you read it?
Yeah, I did. She did a really good job. It's kind of funny, too, the way she presented it.
How did she refer to that woman
that was such a witch? Elvira?
She refers to
Vampia.
Vampira.
Vampira.
Vampira, yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious.
But those of you who are listening, you can join us in our chat room with Doc Don. Dr. Deborah's there, Shaka Zulu, single tax on land, smooth operator, smooth is here, YJ's in the room, and Stein's. They're all chatting about what we're talking about, and what we're talking about right now is Wisconsin. Take a listen to this.
We began the process of canvassing the results for the general election held on April 5th. The purpose of the canvass is to verify the unofficial results reported on election night and reconcile them with the actual tape totals. The canvass serves the important purpose of verifying the numbers and checking for their errors before I submit those results to the Government Accountability Board. After the canvass, the official votes for the Supreme Court election on April 5th are as follows. Justice David Prosser, 92,263. Joanne Kloppenburg, 32,758. These numbers differ from the unofficial numbers that were distributed on election night for the following reasons. First, in the city of New Berlin, the total for one ward was reported as 37, but the tape clearly showed that the votes for that ward for Justice Prosser was 237. Second, in the town of Lisbon, a typing error resulted in a change in the vote totals. Both candidates in that contest lost votes, or their votes were reduced. Finally, the most significantly, I discovered that the data that was sent to me from the city of Brookfield was not transferred to the final report that was given to the media on Tuesday night. The spreadsheet from Brookfield was imported into a database that was provided by the GAB, but it was inadvertently not saved. As a result, when I ran the report to show the aggregate numbers that were collected from all the municipalities, I assumed that the city of Brookfield was included, and it was not. The city of Brookfield cast 14,315 votes on April 5th. 10,859 votes went for Justice David Prosser, and 3,456 went for Joanne Kloppenburg. These numbers will be reflected in my official results, the canvas report that was submitted to the Government Accountability Board. I noticed a discrepancy during the canvass. I was in the process of reconciling the City of Brookfield numbers with the data reported in the election night. I'm thankful that this error was caught early in the process and during the canvass. Again, the purpose of the canvass is to catch these types of errors. It is important to stress that this is not a case of extra votes or extra ballots being found. This is human error, which I apologize for, which is common in this process.
Alpha, did she say how many times did this woman in an 8-minute 18-minute press conference say this is human error? And then did she say this is common?
What? Yeah, that was the killer. That was the killer.
Right.
But you know what? If you watch the video of the news segment of her, she is lying through her teeth. She can hardly look up from that paper. She can't look at the – it takes her a while to formulate her words. She is lying through her teeth.
Our number is 347-838-9852, and we really do want to examine this woman's teeth because
well, she need a dental job, don't she?
For a minute, let me bring everybody up to date because I think it's really important for us to understand Wisconsin's place in the vast right-wing conspiracy. Yeah, Alpha, I said it. It's a vast right-wing conspiracy because they are practicing now to steal the 2012 election from Barack Obama with all the other strategies that are in place. Voter suppression, screwing the American working people to the wall, and knocking out poor people so that poor people will figure they can never win and they won't go and vote. But here is Wisconsin, the members of the accountability board, first of all, were appointed by the previous Democratic administration, and so they will be able to answer many questions about how this serendipitous discovery of extra votes, just enough to prevent a recount, actually happened. And this agency, the Wisconsin Accountability Board, is not a bipartisan, it's not partisan in any way. It will certify results of Tuesday's race until it concludes. It won't certify until it concludes a probe into how a county clerk misplaced and then found some 14,000 votes that upended that race.
Well, Janice, let me say this about this woman. She is also took a plea deal, and she was involved in this plea deal where people went to jail in 2002. In 2004, she mailed out pre-marked ballots. In 2005, she mailed out wrong ballots. In 2006, people thought they won and they didn't win. In 2007, people thought they won and didn't win. How is this woman still in a position of authority, number one? Number two, the Department of Justice on a federal level, and I know this was a state election, and they've got the state elect people looking into it now, but not only should, you know, she moved this data to her personal computer without anyone else knowing it. They were all kept out of the loop. She is the only one who knew what she did. Now it's coming to light that what she has done is, and everybody is supposed to take her word with her history. This woman needs to be investigated. This woman needs to be locked up. Because at some point, they even 3 months ago, they even went in and suggested to her that she increase her security and make sure she has backup. She refused to do it and said she would take it under consideration. This was an act. A purposeful act of election fraud, not voter fraud, election fraud. And they should be reaming her behind and investigating her up and down from heel to tail. This is crazy. And like you said, this is just the trial balloon to steal the 2012 election.
with their voter suppression that's going on in 22 states. Do you realize that 900,000 people will be knocked off the voter rolls in Ohio, a key battleground state? And yet the Department of Justice has remained, you know, they've been muted. You know, Eric Holder, and where's the ACLU? Where are the people who are supposed to guarantee the legitimacy, the credibility of our democracy, of these elections? This is ridiculous. This is about Republicans and the power that they have gained because people stayed home. People were not excited about what this president has done, and they just figured they'd stay home because they couldn't, you know, elect somebody who they couldn't elect Charlie Brown or Lucy. You know,
well,
these
one, yeah,
alternative,
you know,
people that people are put up to. You know, I understand they speak truth to power, but they've got about as much chance of being president as I do. And I've got so many skeletons in my closet that I'm not sticking my head up.
So
this
well,
is what you get when you stay home.
You know, I said the same thing to my mother, who called today to find out if they shut down the government. So, you know, but one of the things that goes back to what Don had to say and what Cher is, we have just been lulled to sleep beyond ourselves, You know, we need some peasant pitchforks.
Well, there's no sense in bringing out pitchforks and torches. They can't get on your back if you don't bend over. I'm stealing that from somebody else. You know, you ask the question, what is the greatest danger? Apathy and ignorance. Apathy and ignorance. There are people who have survived a public school education to achieve. There are people who have survived the racism, the disparaged treatment in education who have achieved. Look in the mirror, Janice. You know who they are. And when you sit back and you talk about the white man is going to do what the white man is going to do, the system of white supremacy will take hold. Will you persevere? Will you remain vigilant? Will you get that education, or will apathy seize you up?
Well, you know,
Kevin
Zeese, the director of Prosperity Agenda, said this, that the political process no longer works. The economy is controlled by a handful of economic elites. The necessities of most Americans are no longer being met. The only way to change this is to shift the power to a culture of resistance. And my question is, Dr. Deborah, what does resistance look like? We don't need leaders. We don't need directives from above. We don't need formal organizations. All you have to do is you read Amy Alexander's piece and you'll understand what's happening there. We don't need to waste our time appealing to the Democratic Party or writing letters to the editor, which I used to say all the time. We don't need more diatribes on the Internet. We need to physically get into the public square and create a mass movement. We need people in our community to come to the square, and once you do that, you begin to create a force that the elites always desperately try to snuff out, and it's called resistance. The phrase consent of the governed has been turned into a cruel joke. There is no way to vote against the interests of Goldman Sachs or Scott Walker, obviously, or the new governor of Florida or Ohio, civil disobedience is the only tool that we have left, and that's what I maintain. And we have got to make resistance real. What will Audre Lorde, was it Audre Lorde, Dr. D? Audre Lorde said that resistance is the ultimate of revolution. Our number is 347-838-9852. You do so much. You try so much to work in the system. Look at how easily this whole shutdown thing, this Wisconsin thing, they are just thumbing their noses at the American people.
Mm-hmm.
They came out of the shadows. This black president made them absolutely pathological.
Mm. Well, I think, you know, Janice, honestly, for some segment of the country, it made them pathological, and that certainly helps the folks in charge do what they need to do to basically take this country back in the way that they want it to be. But the flip side of it is that the people in power now, as far as elected officials, are willingly going along with the corporate interests of this country. And that's really just the flat-out truth of it, including Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's going to take an issue of taking it to the streets and staying. The other thing is to stay connected with one another and to stay energized, because I think that part of what happened, or the goal of part of what this thing when they brought in the other votes too, is to make people feel like no matter what you do, it won't work. So, you know, the people in Wisconsin so far seem to be staying engaged. What I can't understand is why that fire has not spread across the country, because Wisconsin is not the only state that is facing this type of upheaval. And, you know, if I myself have no faith in Barack Obama or the Democrats to stop Paul Ryan's budget into going into effect for 2012. None.
What'd
you say, Alpha?
Who else is going to stop it? Who else will stop it? It will go, if this president doesn't stand for the working people, if they don't stand and stop this Paul Ryan, I don't think it's a matter of whether he'll stand and stop it. He has no choice if he wants to a second term. Because look at the history. Anybody who is, that's radioactive. Medicare is radioactive. It's the political third rail. Do you think, it's not going to happen?
Yeah, I hate to come to the place where I say that we have very limited options, but we do. My brother Kalamuya Salam in New Orleans, who I've known for ages, I remember when he was a young poet. And what we have to learn is what he has said, taking the words of Zora Neale Hurston and not Sojourner Truth, but he writes in one of his recent poems, "All that's black ain't brother. Mulatto superciliousness is a real bitch, ain't it?" And I think that's where we're stuck. We're stuck in, you know, let me take a minute to just play a little piece of what Barack Obama said before he announced his presidency about being the president. He had some interesting things to say, and that's why at the beginning of the program I was saying, you know, how much it must be that you change, that you somehow have, you know that song that I like that I'm always playing, and Alpha kind of rises up and his nose goes up in the air. Something inside me. Y'all remember that? See, here's a little piece. Yeah, you got that? That's our song. Maybe this is what has happened to that president. You'll get the gist.
He's hungry for
it. What president
he
had
told
to say.
The Men's Vogue magazine that if you wanted to be president, you shouldn't just think about being president, that you should want to be a great president. So you've clearly given this some thought.
Yes.
That's Tim Russell.
And what would, in your mind, define a great president?
Obviously, most of the time it seems the president has maybe 10% of his agenda set by himself and 90% of it set by circumstances. So, you know, an Abraham Lincoln is defined by slavery and the war. FDR defined by the Depression and World War II. So I'm not sure that I can categorize what are those ingredients in each and every circumstance. But I think when I think about great presidents, I think about those who transform how we think about ourselves as a country in fundamental ways, so that at the end of their tenure, we have looked and said to ourselves, that's who we are. And for me, at least, that means that we have a more expansive view of our democracy, that we've included more people into the bounty of this country. And, you know, there are circumstances in which I would argue Ronald Reagan was a very successful president, even though I did not agree with him on many issues, partly because at the end of his presidency, people, I think, said, you know what, we can regain our greatness. Individual responsibility and personal responsibility are important, and they transformed the culture and not simply promoted one or two particular issues.
The last Democratic president, Bill Clinton.
And you see, here's this president who has a great vision not only for his presidential ambition, his presidential inspiration, and his legacy. What happened?
Janice, let me ask you this. Is it a possibility he was bullshitting us all the time?
Well, let me see.
Maybe he really didn't change.
For the 100th time, this man did not live the black experience. And for what people expect from him, how is he going to respond in that way if he's not of that ilk?
But Alpha, for me, although I would like to have seen him give something to the black community, he's not even relating to John Q. average white person, working person, and he sure wasn't raised as a rich person. So I'm simply saying, even just relating to common everyday needs and for the working man, regardless of, 'cause he ain't even doing that.
Well, you know, it's open night, open mic Saturday night. I'm going to say this. I have never, ever seen a black man take as many ass whippings and keep on ticking at the same level as this man.
Yeah, he you know what? quoting from being in the streets.
Alpha's point.
I looked at him several times.
At the same level.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I done looked at him several times to piggyback on that point, Janice, on TV, and said, this nigga's nose got to be bleed.
Let me try to, and our number is 347-838-9852, and if you want to get in on this conversation, you simply have to dial those numbers, 347-838-9852. And we welcome your call. We welcome your point of view. And we have a lot of points of views out there. But let me just say this. Most of my adult life, I have spent in the company of, worked with some very powerful, some very severely educated black folks. Many of them are graduates of the Harvard Business School, the Harvard Law School, because, you know, you all know I'm in Boston. I'm a graduate of the Sloan School of Management at MIT. I have worked in 5 major Fortune 100 companies at senior levels, and I have never seen a black person under the press of white folks trying to beat you down as I have seen this man go under. With that said, I understand, too, the transformation that you either bend or you break, or you leave. I forgot about that one. But this man must have, somebody must have put voodoo on this man's inbox after they figured out he was African-American, and I don't call him black because he's not a descendant of the slaves of America, and that is not any put-down. That's simply the fact of the matter. Mm-hmm. He's an African-American.
Yep.
And I call people, you know, from the Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean. I call my family from Cuba Afro-Cubans. But there has to be some transformation. But most politicians, either whether you're a corporate politician or you're a government politician or you're a public politician, you figure out your inside and your outside politics. You figure out, like the speech that he made last night, I would expect Miles and Imani to have figured out, that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to talk about the Washington Monument and the people coming to do this and act like, you know, it's like we were having a big discussion because Miles is getting to that point where he's supposed to be in the bathroom taking a shower. Instead, he's sitting on the toilet reading and letting mm-hmm. the shower run, and then he puts on his pajamas and he comes out, and he's still stinking the same way that he is. When mm-hmm. And he makes a speech about how he did it real fast, and that's why he's still stinking. Okay, and that's exactly what President Barack Obama did last night, as though he's delivering to us some victory. I was offended.
I you know what? I looked at it, and if it wasn't such a serious issue, it would have almost been funny, because I'm like, you serious?
Absolutely.
I know you ain't sitting
Are
up here telling
serious?
Us about no damn cherry fucking blossom festival. I don't give a damn. I don't really give a damn. Shit, you think you talking about screwing people?
But Dr. D, everybody, I was scared to call Alpha Thursday when they announced they had found the 14,000 votes. I knew that he was going to be delivering me body blows through the phone from Chicago. oh wow.
But Janice, you know when you said your mother called you today and asked you did the government? See, I mean, your mother's older. My mother's 90 years old, and she was over here the other day, Thursday. I cooked dinner for her. And I was fussing about Paul Ryan releasing that budget and the different things. And I said, he talking about privatizing Medicare and fooling with Social Security. My mom was like, what? And I, you know, kind of laughed because, I mean, they're older, and my mama can't even hear good. So even when she watched TV half the time, she's missing what's going on. I overlooked that. But what I'm saying is, you know, that is really representative of what's going on with 30-year-olds in our community who have all their faculties, so-called.
Because
it's kind of scary.
I read between the lines. My mother wasn't calling me to see if there was a government employee, a federal government employee furlough. She was calling me to see if Social Security had shut down and whether or not she was going to get her check. She wasn't checking on nothing but that. You know, and I was trying to explain to my sister, who's older, about why I supported the notion that I would be willing to make the personal sacrifice of risking not getting paid for a couple of weeks for the shutdown, because it was going to bring all this nonsense to a head for most people. They didn't hear about it on Thursday, but when it happened on Friday, they would be caring about it on Monday morning. And my sister almost came through the phone at me about how she needed her check, her Social Security check. Yes, I do. I hope she's not listening. Yes, I do have a sister who is old enough to have Social Security check. I call Alpho, and Alpho was singing the Phil Collins song to me. You know that song he likes? I don't care what they say. What's the name of that song, Alpha?
I don't care anymore. Let me say this. You would have it in your file if you didn't delete it from mine. But let me say this. You know, I was all for shutting the government down. I was all for having him make a case that if you're not going to close these tax loopholes for these corporations that aren't paying any taxes, if you're not going to rescind the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, if you're not going to raise taxes on the millionaire, if the tax rate for corporations is 35%, why are there corporations paying 1%, 11%, 10%, 9%, 0% and getting refunds, and you're looking to balance a budget? Why are you not talking about defense? And like I said, for the 15th, 20th time, he's fighting on the wrong field. That's not the battlefield he should be fighting on. The American people, this is how easy, this is how simple this is. The American people, the poll says that Social Security, don't touch it. 77% of the American people say don't touch it. Medicare, 76% of the people
don't touch
my damn Medicare. Medicaid, 67%. Raise taxes on the millionaires. 81% of the American people said raise taxes on the millionaires and billionaires. Close the tax loopholes, 78%. How simple is this? And what are we fighting on that battlefield for that is taking away home heating, WIC programs from women, infants, and children, Head Start from children, cutting food stamps by $125 billion? What in the hell are we talking about?
And my thing is, what are they doing now? I said this at the beginning when I called in, that they think we're not paying attention to, where the real, hoopla is how they end, what they really end up cutting.
How the hell we got 70 Army bases open all over the world?
Explain
that
to me, somebody. That don't make no sense
to
me. Okay,
folks, we're gonna close this up tonight, and we thank
have
all
a good
for
one.
for being with us. Thank you, Dr. Deborah, for staying
okay,
with us.
Okay, take care, Alpha. Alpha, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock.
What?
You heard me.
What about 8 o'clock?
A heart for my people.
Tuesday
with Dr.
night
Deborah.
At 8 o'clock. Have your butt on the phone.
Tuesday night. I was on the phone last. I was bamboozled
you,
last Tuesday.
Okay, did you get it? You got
okay,
it then.
Can.
Bye.
Thank you all for being with us tonight. We're going to close with what I think is a teachable moment for us to get focused here, because the greatest threat is for us not to understand how we play in all of this. Alpha, thank you so much. Thank you, Aronde, for your call, and Sarah, and the Dean of Research, as India DeClaire will say. Don't forget to catch us on Monday night, Power Views. We're going to be talking about Dr. Manning Marable's book, The Reinvention of Malcolm X and the Furor in Our Community. This has been Our Common Ground. We so much thank you. Please invite somebody to come with you next Saturday night here at Our Common Ground.
In fact, in the old countries of Europe, we had spent most of our time killing each other. We didn't love each other. We weren't one big happy family. The side of my family that comes from Scotland, hell, they didn't even worry about fighting people outside of Scotland. Highlanders and Lowlanders just fought the hell out of each other. So there was no white race, but in the colonies of what would become the United States, what did we see in the 1660s, 1670s? We began to see that Africans of indentured servant status, many of them not enslaved yet, they were not necessarily permanently enslaved. Some were, others were indentured like many poor Europeans for periods of 7 to 11 years. They could work off their indenture and then they would be free labor technically. Realized, as did the white indentured servants, the Europeans who hadn't even been called white yet, that they had a lot of things in common, like the fact that they were all getting their clock cleaned by the elite. And so they would get together more than our history books taught us, to foment rebellion against the elite, to try to get a better deal for themselves on the basis of economic necessity and economic justice. And what did the elite do? When you see that you're outnumbered by black and white folks who are penniless, landless, peasants, you have to do one of two things. You either have to kill them all, but you can't do that because who's going to work? Rich folks weren't going to. They had to get poor people to work. The whole point was to be a person of leisure back in those days. That was the goal. Was not to work. So you couldn't kill them all. You didn't want to kill them all. You had to do the work yourself, not to build your own levee, build your own house. No. Pick your own tobacco. Harvest your own cotton. No. We're not going to do any of that. So you can't kill them, but you can co-opt them. And so the elite in Virginia, for example, in the colony, begins to give certain carrots to people of European descent, saying things like, you know, we're going to let you own a little land. Not much, but just a little, and we're going to get rid of indentured servitude. Now you're free labor, and by the way, once you're free labor, you get 50 acres of land just because you're free labor, see? So we're going to cut you in on this deal. We're going to let you enter into contracts. We're going to let you testify in court, and here's the best of all. We're going to put you on the slave patrol to keep those people in line, right? The idea was you're still going to get your clock clean. We still don't like you. We still aren't going to really empower you or change your economic subordination, but we're going to make you honorary members of this team, and you're going to help us keep those other people down. And so they got a little taste of power, and it did effectively divide and conquer those coalitions. Those rebellions began to stop almost instantly. Fast forward to the Civil War era, you have rich white folks in the South, where I come from, standing up and openly admitting that the reason they're prepared to secede from the Union, and the only reason they ever articulated publicly ever, was to maintain and extend slavery and white supremacy not only where it already existed, but into the newly acquired, that is to say, stolen territories from Mexico to the West. That was what they said. Now we lie about it. We say it wasn't about slavery, that it was about states' rights. Yes, the right of the states to keep and maintain slaves, exactly. But back then they had no shame, so they didn't try and cover it up. They openly said it, but once again, the rich didn't want to go do the work. Are you kidding? No. They're going to get poor people to go fight for them. And the poor folks didn't even own slaves. Now think, how do you get poor people who don't even own the shirt on their back, let alone slaves, to go fight to keep your slaves for you? You've got to convince them that their skin is more important than their economic interest. Because think about it. If I am a farmer who has to charge you $1 a day or $2 a week to work on your farm, and harvest that tobacco or pick that cotton, but you can get a black person to do it for free because you own them, who's going to get the job? Not me. In other words, slavery actually undermined the wages and the wage base, the economic floor of the typical white working class or low-income person. But they were told, if these people are freed, they're going to take your job. No, fool, they got your job. That's the point. And so at some level, again, working-class white people being harmed by white privilege, relatively being advantaged, right? Being given a leg up, being given a membership to the club, but in absolute terms being kept economically subordinated by the very thing that gave them a sense of superiority. How's that for irony? Then in the present era, this hasn't stopped. This is not ancient history. Now we have people running around insisting that we should close the border with Mexico because if we don't, the wages of working class people will continue to fall, the implication being that the only reason workers are paid like crap in this country is because the border is opened. But if you believe that, you would actually have to believe that if that border were closed, that all these owners of capital and industry would just say, oh, well, you figured us out. Here, it's a raise. Do we really believe that the only thing keeping bosses from paying people more is the presence of low-wage, medium, semi-skilled labor from south of this artificial border? Is that really what we believe? We know that if that border is closed, it isn't going to be closed to capital. It isn't going to be closed to goods. If you have a border that can be crossed by capital looking for the highest return on investment or goods looking for the highest price, but labor is chained to its country of origin, how is that going to work to the benefit of working people? By definition, it doesn't. By definition, it immiserates the working class. Divide and conquer. But the best example of all, perhaps, in the contemporary era in the greater New Orleans area after Katrina, here you have two communities that were the most hard hit. The Lower Ninth Ward, mostly black community, 94% African American, about 40% official poverty rate, heavy working class community. And right across the canal, St. Bernard Parish, Chalmette, 95% white, also working class, high levels of poverty, economically very similar. And at the end of the day, in those first few days of September 2005, more similar than they probably would have realized. Because when those levees broke, they all got their stuff jacked. They all got their stuff destroyed. But if you had asked white folks in Chalmette, and I've done it, who was the cause of the problems in the greater New Orleans area prior to that flooding, they would have pointed across that canal at those black folks, wouldn't have called them black folks, and would have said, there, that's the problem. 70% of the white folks in St. Bernard Parish voted for David Duke, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, former head of the largest Ku Klux Klan group in the United States when he ran for governor in 1991. 7 out of 10 gladly voted for him because he was blaming black folks for all of their problems, and they bought it. What's the irony? The irony is that while they were blaming black people for their problems, while they were blaming black people for the conditions of the greater New Orleans area in which they lived, nobody was paying attention, least of all they, to the fact that these white elite politicians, either in Baton Rouge or in Washington, whose job it was to secure those levees, to make sure that levee funds were spent in the proper way and that they were spent at all, those mostly white and mostly elite politicians did nothing. At the end of the day, it wasn't just the black folks in the Lower Ninth Ward they didn't care about. They really couldn't have given a rat's ass about those poor and working class white folks either.
Listening to Our Common Ground with Janice Graham at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. We do our best to speak truth to power and ourselves. We hope you'll join us each Saturday night, 10 p.m., right here in the Wild Wild West.